Okay, everyone, good morning, good afternoon. Thursday is Parshas HaShavua, and therefore I wanted to share with you two ideas on this coming week's Parsha, Parshat Tzav. It's actually a little bit of a treat for a show rabbi, because usually on the Shabbos of Shabbos HaGadol, the rabbi doesn't speak on the Parsha in the morning. But this afternoon, or this evening in Israel, I will be giving a Shabbos HaGadol Drasha, and I get to speak about Parshat Tzav, two ideas on the Parsha. So it's a double treat for me. No one feels the need to confirm if it's a double treat for you. But two ideas on Parshat Tzav, a Parsha that I don't often get a chance to speak about. So first, let's start at the outset of the Parsha. The opening of our Parsha tells us, Tzav, where the name comes from, is Aaron v'esbanav le'mor. Aaron and his children, the Kohanim, are commanded, and they are told, Zos Torah Sa'ola. This is the Parsha. This is going to be the halachos of the Karban Ola, the fire offering, as it's often translated, the carbon that is completely consumed on the Mizbeach, as the Psukim continue. Ola Al Mokda Al Mizbeach Kohalaila. This is the one that has to burn completely out of Boker. The Eish HaMizbeach Tukadbo. The flame remains continuing and consuming this carbon. The Pasuk continues a few Psukim later. Ha Eish HaMizbeach Tukadbo. Again, emphasizing this point, how the fire remains on the Mizbeach. The animal gets completely consumed. Lo Sechbeo Be'er Aleah HaKohen Eitzim BaBoker BaBoker. More fire, more wood. Hikir Aleah Chelvei Ashlamim. Nothing should be extinguished. The fire keeps on going. It is completely, completely consumed. Almost 20 years ago, 18 years ago to be precise, at a Seudah Shlishit, at a Shalashudis in Yeshivat Haratzion in the Gush, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein focused his attention on these psukim. And he wondered basically two questions. Number one, he said, these psukim focus pretty much exclusively on the process of the carbon, about how the wood is brought, how it remains completely burning throughout the night, burning, 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 fire, fire, fire. But these psukim never tell us what situations or which people have to bring a carbon ola. We have to go to other parts of the Torah to find out when and why and who would bring a carbon ola at all. All we have is four or five psukim at the beginning of our parsha, just emphasizing burn, baby, burn. Just burn that carbon. It's fully burned. It's burned. It's got to be burned. Fire, fire, fire. But nothing else. It seems peculiar. Secondly, Rav Lichtenstein notes that there is a weird interruption, in the middle of these psukim. I didn't read it yet, but right in the beginning, I read to you before psukim Bet and then Hey through Vav. But the truth is that right in the middle of those, in Psukim Gimel and Dalid, the Torah seems to take a detour. It interrupts its description of the Karban Ola by telling us about what? The Trumas Hadeshen. How the first thing every morning that took place in the Beis HaMikdash was that a Kohen would come and would elevate, or he would take a symbolic or a sample amount of the leftover ashes from the previous day's karbanos, which had been consumed on the Mizbeach, and he would take a certain ritual he had to do by taking a certain small amount, a symbolic amount of the ashes. But this again is very, very peculiar. Why would these psukim about the ola, burn, baby, burn, fire, 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 why are they interrupted right in the middle, mitten drin, and all of a sudden you have two psukim about the Trumas Hadeshin, about taking a little bit of the ashes, and then the psukim go back, psukim hay and vav, back to the Karban Ola. Obviously something a little bit peculiar. So in order to answer these two questions, Rav Lichtenstein posited the following. He said, really, there are two different dimensions, two aspects, two different functions of the Karban Ola. On the one hand, it is part of the general framework of the sacrificial service, of the Avodas HaKarbanos. It is like any other karban, and in that sense, it is there to serve our needs. There are certain people who are in certain situations in life, whether they're circumstances or particular response to particular sins, or what's directed for them, what they need, is to bring a karban ola. On the other hand, there's an additional second dimension to the Karban Ola, as the Psukim in our Parsha reveal, and that is that the Karban has another role. It serves not necessarily the purpose of the human beings, but rather, in a certain sense, if we can say, it serves the purpose of the Mizbeach itself. The purpose of the Ola is to ensure a perpetual fire on the Mizbeach, as we read and is repeated multiple times in these few Psukim. Mokta al mizbeach, kol alayla ad haboker, eish hamizbeach, tukat bo, tamid tukat al mizbeach, lo tichbeh, etc., etc. Really, in fact, are these two different dimensions. And what's striking, therefore, to note, said Rav Lichtenstein, is by opening our parsha the way it does, the Torah is giving precedence. The Torah is first focusing on the function of the Ola as a service to the Mizbeach, rather than how it would serve man or mankind, which is a different format and a different presentation than other karbanos. One more point of background or broader information, and then we can put it all together with a tremendous message for us. And that is as follows. We all know that the daily karbanos that had to be brought on behalf of the entire nation are known as the karban tamid. There was a karban tamid that was brought first thing in the morning, and then the tamid shel beina harbayim, the afternoon tamid, which was the last thing that was brought every day in the Beis HaMikdash. Every day we open up with a national communal karban tamid, and we close the Beis HaMikdash with a national or communal karban tamid. The karban tamid, which is of course what our shachras and mincha prayers are patterned after, that karban tamid, which had to be brought every day, twice a day on behalf of the nation, that karban was an ola. That was a carbon that was fully consumed and burnt on the Mizbeach. However, that carbon, as I mentioned a few moments ago, in the morning, we bring it every morning, but it's the first carbon that's brought. But it's not the first thing that happens in the Beis HaMikdash. The first thing is the Trumas Hadeshen, the clearing of the Mizbeach, at least symbolically, by lifting up some of those ashes. The Psukim in our Parsha describe that the very same Kohen who took the ashes had to then change his clothing. He wasn't wearing weekday clothing. There was no dress down Fridays in the Beis HaMikdash. They were wearing big day kahuna, but of a little bit of a lower level. He would then change out of those clothing into the regular big day kahuna because he was dirty from that first job. He was dirty from removing the ashes. And the regular karbon, bringing the karbon tamid, the regular avodah of the sacrificial services, needed to be done in nice and beautiful clothing. It couldn't be done in the dirty work clothing that had been used to remove the ashes. The Gemara in Yuma on Daf Chav Gimel gives a very beautiful and vivid metaphor and says that a servant doesn't wear the same clothing when he's boiling the pot of soup or water for his master as he does when he then actually comes out of the kitchen and serves the master at the dining room table. There's the kind of clothing you wear when you're in the kitchen getting all dirty preparing the food, and then there's the nicer clothing the servant wears when he or she brings out the food to the master. So too, the Trumat HaDeshen, important, a required service, but a messy, dirty service, one type of clothing, then that's a preparatory stage, and then the more elevated service of the actual karbanos, different clothing. And yet, the Gemara there in Yuma on the previous Amud tells us, and this is the key point before we bring it home, is that a Kohen, says the Gemara, who was not prepared, who was unwilling to clean out the ashes, is not allowed to, is not permitted to perform the sacrificial service, the avoda. If a Kohen would think he's too good for the Trumas HaDeshen, he doesn't want to do the dirty work, then he's actually disqualified even from the more elevated or prestigious work. So now, with all of that information, what does it mean? How do we put this together in a way that we not only understand the Torah on its own merits, but also as a take-home message for us? So to do all that, Rav Lichtenstein said as follows. He said, these halachos of the Karban Ola, as detailed and perhaps esoteric as they may seem, are actually teaching us an incredibly important and timeless message. A person who wants to engage in the worship and the service of Hashem, who wants to be actively involved in the Avodas Hashem, which the sacrificial service, the Avodas HaKarbanos, are an example of, a paradigm of, but beyond the Karbanos, even generally, a person who wants to be involved in the Avodas Hashem has to realize that he cannot put his own interests above the halachic details or even the halachic values. Sometimes, and we can all think of examples, Yiddishkeit, Jewish life, ritual life, halachic observance, sometimes it includes unglamorous aspects. Sometimes it includes tedious or difficult details. Sometimes there's taxing or challenging work that goes into being a Jew that is part of Avodas Hashem. Whether it's cleaning out the ashes in the Beis HaMikdash or many other, maybe perhaps less extreme examples. In all of these cases, a person has to realize that what the Torah says, what the halachic says, whether it's in its details, in a specific prescription, or even in its broader values, that always has to come first beyond a person's personal interests. We have to be prepared to do everything, even the unglamorous or the tedious details, instead of just worrying about what we want, what speaks more to us, or we find more enjoyable. Perhaps, said Rav Lichtenstein, this is why the Torah defines the purpose of the Ola when it does in our Parsha, and it starts off by focusing not on what the Ola can do for us, whether it's as a nation, the Karban Tamid, or as an individual in certain circumstances who has to bring a Karban Ola. That's true. We'll get to that. But the Torah starts off its presentation of the Karban Ola, not with what's good for us, but Kavayocho, so to speak, what's good for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does the Mizbeach, as it were, need? Serving the needs of the Mizbeach, to have a fire there constantly. God's needs, as it were, it's being communicated, have to always come before man's needs. Moreover, with this interruption of the Trumas HaDeshen, we are also being taught this incredibly important complementary lesson, that a person who's prepared, so to speak, to pour a drink for his master, but not prepared to do the work in the kitchen, not prepared to boil the water to make the drink, that person is not a true Eved, and therefore not even worthy of pouring the drink. Only someone who's willing to do whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks of him or her, whether it's the exalted and the uplifting and the inspiring, or even the more difficult, the more mundane, and the sometimes more tedious. Only someone who's willing to put HaKadosh Baruch Hu's needs and the values of the Torah before his or her own needs, only such a person is truly worthy of coming close in an entirety, like a Karban Ola, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What defines us, whether we're in the Beis HaMikdash or not, what defines us as Ovdei Hashem, servants of God, is our ability to put our personal desires aside when they collide with higher values. This is what differentiates a person who is a servant of Hashem from a person who's really just serving him or herself. That's not only true when we talk about, so to speak, gashmius or physical needs and how they conflict with the Torah, but even within religious service, we see from this parsha, even the personal benefit that a person might get from the Karban Ola still has to be superseded by the quote-unquote benefit to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the Karban, for that very same Karban. I think in general, and Rav Lichtenstein gave this speech 18 years ago, I don't know if he gave specific examples, in the summary that I saw written up, there were no specific examples, but you can imagine examples in every generation, in every situation, but certainly in light of what we're dealing with in Israel, and I'm sure people have been dealing with around the world, and certainly people see the news from all over the world, what strikes me as being such a, you know, not that I needed this Dvar Torah to, so to speak, guide me about what seems to be obviously right and wrong in this case, but just it hit home so strikingly when you think about, unfortunately, and again, I don't know what percentage of people this is. I certainly hope it's a small percentage, but unquestionably over the last few weeks and even in the last week, we've all seen, whether it's in Israel or other places, and the news reports, unfortunately, are ubiquitous, of minyanim or other public displays of mitzvah or religious observance that are clearly going against the guidelines of the health department, whether it's Israeli Misrad HaBriyut or in other countries, what the states or various countries or municipalities are requiring. And when you think about, you know, the need for v'chai behem, v'nishmarta b'es nafsho seichem, lifnei iver, the damage that you're doing to other people, to the health system in general, how you're putting everyone in sakana, let alone yourself, which the Torah doesn't want you to do. When you see people going to minyan, despite the fact that it took a while for certain rabbanim to come along, certain rabbanim, I'm proud to say, including my own rebbeim, we're way ahead of the curve on this, but at this point, there's like no rebbeim, no one responsible is telling people to go to minyan or to defy these medical requirements or these municipal guidelines. And yet, when you see people who are still doing it, you just have to wonder, and again, it's blunt, but you have to say, you know, who are you davening to? Who are you worshiping? Whose needs is it? It's a fascinating phenomenon that people seem to have this incredible need for minyan. I could be more cynical and say they have a need for public displays of piety, but I'd rather give people the benefit of the doubt and say it's at least sincere and not cynical. But still, it could be, just because it's sincere doesn't make it correct. You could be sincerely wrong. Some of the greatest damage in the world happens when people are sincere and they're terribly wrong in damaging beliefs. Who are you worshiping to? It's clear the Rabbanim have been saying for weeks and certainly for days, stop it, don't do it. Put Hashem's needs before your own. Maybe you have a need for minyan. It's interesting if it's true, but okay. But it doesn't matter you have a need for minyan. Hashem's need is v'chai behem. Hashem's need is v'nishmartem. And Hashem is telling you not to do it. I'm not getting into now the specifics, how far away, and if I'm on a mirpeset, whatever counts as technically in the hanchayot or in the guidelines of whatever municipality you're in, that's all I'm describing now. I'm not here to discuss the details, as thorny as they may be. What counts as keeping the guidelines, what doesn't count, that's a separate discussion. But there clearly have been some blatant transgressions. And again, you just have to ask yourself, you know, who are you davening to? If HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the same one who tells you v'chai behem, is also telling you not to go to Minyan, and you go to Minyan, how do you process that? It's just really, it's just a fascinating, if not absurd, reality. And again, I think it certainly goes against what the message of the Karban Ola, as Rav Lichtenstein elucidated it for us. I want to transition now to a second idea later on in the Parsha, and that is another Karban, a Karban that's even perhaps more well known to us, and that is the Karban Toda, the Thanksgiving Karban, which is presented, if I remember correctly, I think it's right by Shlishi in the Parsha, in Perek Zayin, in Psukim Yud Bet, in Yud Gimel, and it tells us about the Karban Toda, the Thanksgiving Karban, which was brought, there was obviously a good amount of meat that was brought, but it was also accompanied by a huge amount of matzos, as well as a smaller amount, but a sizable amount of chametz, of actual loaves of leaven, of chametzdik, so to speak, a product. That's explicitly mentioned by the Torah in Pasuk Yud Gimel. And as some of you probably know, this is quite an anomaly and very striking, because all of the other karbonos that have some kind of a flour product, a karbon mincha that goes with it, all of the other minchos, at least for a private person, for a karbon yachid, they're all matzah. They're all unleavened. The only other example that we have of chametz on the Mizbeach is a karban tzibor. That's the shtei halachem, the two loaves that are brought on Shavuos, a once-a-year thing. But for a private individual, the only karban yachid the whole year at any point that's ever brought this leaven, that's chametz, is this small fraction of the karban toda. And of course, it begs the question, if it's never allowed, you're not supposed to have chametz on the Mizbeach, all of a sudden, why dafka by a karban toda do you have chametz? A lot of answers to this question, but a beautiful answer I saw earlier today in Rav Zevin's Sefer, L'Torah U'Lemoadim. The Rav Zevin, of course, is more well known as a famed Lamdan, a Talmud Chacham. He wrote many of his own works in Halacha, also the founding editor of the Encyclopedia Talmudit, Gadol Gaon Hador. But he also was a beautiful darshan. He has a one-volume work called L'Torah L'Moadim, which are drushas on the Parshas, drushas on the Yom Tovim. And our Parsha, he says the following. He references the fact that it's well known in many sources, the Gemara and other places, Chazal si chametz as a metaphor specifically for arrogance. The air that puffs up the bread is like puffery, it's like arrogance, being full of hot air, so to speak. And more broadly, the Seor Shebi'isa, leaven represents, even in the broadest sense, the Yetzer Hara, our more base and less ennobled desires. On the other hand, matzah, of course, represents simplicity, purity, humility, in general, our Yetzer HaTov. And therefore, thus understood, it's not at all a surprise that most karbanos would only have unleavened products, would only have matzahs, which symbolize humility, subservience, and purity. So how come the karban toda is different? So the Gemara tells us in Masech Tabrochos on Daf Nun Dalet, Arba Tzrichim Lahodos. There are four people who had to specifically bring this karban. A person who was sick, a chola, who then recovers from a life-threatening illness, someone who crossed the sea and survived that journey, someone who crossed the desert and survived that journey, or someone who was in jail, and again, as bad as our jails are now, the medieval and ancient jails were mamish, sakonos, nefashos. You can't compare what we have now in the civilized world to what they had then. Someone who gets out of jail, that's also as a pikuach nefesh. Those four have to bring the karban toda. What you see from here, says Rav Zevin, and he just teases it out. It's an obvious point, but he teases it out in a way that I don't think I would have appreciated without him. What you see from here is the karban toda is only brought if there was first a tzara and then a yeshua. A crisis, a real threat, and then something good happened. But if anything that's just amazing and good just happens, you're going along life fine, coasting, and then all of a sudden something amazing happens. There are other ways, and you certainly should thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for sure. But it's not a Karban Todah. A Karban Todah only happens if you were really in a tzara, and then survive that, then you bring the Karban Todah. Why? What's the message here? So Rav Zevin points out that if you take a look, what nowadays, of course, we don't have the Karban, but we have a bracha which substitutes for that Karban. That, of course, as we all know, is the Birkas HaGomel. There's a very funny phrase. It's a short, it's not such a long bracha, but there's a very funny phrase in that bracha. I'm not sure most people even who say the bracha pay attention to it, where we say, HaGomel L'chayavim Tovos. Before we conclude, Shigamlani Kol Tov. HaGomel L'chayavim Tovos. What does that mean? HaGomel L'chayavim Tovos. So what it actually means is, we're thanking Hashem who rewards the chayavim, the undeserving. Hashem, you rewarded me, you saved me, you did tovos for me, even though I'm chayav, even though I'm undeserving. Says Rav Zevin, when we make that phrase, when we use that language, HaGomel L'chayavim Tovos, you gave me this incredible Yeshua Hashem, even though I was undeserving. What we're doing, says Rav Zevin, is we're acknowledging that if there was a tzara, the kind of tzara that merits a Birkas HaGomel, the kind of tzara that would have merited in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, bringing in the Karban, if there was such a tzara, if there was that level of a crisis, that means that on some level, we deserved to be in that situation. We were chayavim. We deserved it. And therefore, we're not really deserving the salvation. We're chayavim tovos. Hashem gave us the tova, but we really weren't deserving of the tova. We were deserving, we're chayav, of whatever that particular crisis was. So too, says Rav Zevin, that's what the message of the actual Karban was as well. That's why there's chametz in the Karban. The percentage of loaves which are actually leavened, chametzdik, and not just the matzah, says Rav Zevin, that chametz part of the Karban Torah, that comes to represent to the person who's bringing his Thanksgiving offering and thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the tremendous salvation in the Yeshua, that we consider ourselves chayavim, not fully deserving of this Yeshua that we're thanking you for. We thank you with a full heart, but we know that we're not truly deserving of your good deeds. HaGomel L'chayavim Tovos. We really did deserve to be in the crisis that we're in. We're recipients of Gomel Chasadim, of Chesed from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but we acknowledge that we didn't truly deserve the Yeshua. And since the Karban Todah is Chayavim Tovos, it's a Thanksgiving offering given by someone who didn't truly deserve the Thanksgiving, to symbolize that on the Karban level, we added the Chametz. That's a reference, it's a hint, it's a reminder of our Yetzer Hara. It's a reminder of the part of us that got us into the mess, that got us into the crisis to begin with, which we're now thanking Hashem with the Karban. It is the Karban, the sacrificial example, or parallel, I should say, to what the Nusach Chayavim Tovos represents. In the bracha, we say Chayavim Tovos to remind ourselves that we're not truly deserving. That's Rav Zevin says, that's why originally the Karban had Chametz, to remind us of the Yetzer Hara, to remind us of the part of us that wasn't truly deserving. Really, I have to say, to me, at least when I saw it this morning, a beautiful and a transformational insight into the Karban and into the bracha that at various points in our lives, everyone does say. This is a subtle point, so I want you to listen to me carefully because I don't want to chas v'shalom be misunderstood. But I think this is an incredibly, incredibly important message for what we're all going through now. On the one hand, obviously I don't know why this is happening to the world, nor do I know, obviously, of course not, why this person got sick and a different person didn't get sick, why certain people who got sick might not have any symptoms, why some people who got sick have very light symptoms, other people have very serious symptoms, and Rahman al-Itzlan, we all know many, many people are not going to make it and have already lost their lives. I can't possibly know, I would never dream to begin to know, that's not who I am, that's not the Mesora I have from any of my Rebbeim, and in fact I'm revolted and repulsed by people who talk in those terms, whether it's about this or something else. But here's the key point, which I think sometimes it's uncomfortable, and that's why we often miss it. But just because we can't say with any certainty, I know why this happened, doesn't mean that we are free from trying to think about it. The Rambam very famously says in Hilchos Tanios, right in the beginning, in Perek Aleph, Halacha Beis through Gimel, that when a tzara happens, especially a tzara, it's even true for a person, but let alone a tzara that's affecting the community, the nation, the whole world, when a tzara like this happens, says the Rambam, Meidarchei Atshuva, the appropriate response is that a person should cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, they blew the trumpets, etc. And why do we do this? To tell us that everyone should realize that Biglah HaMaseim HaRoim HaRelehem, that this happened, whatever the bad thing it's happening because of some sin. Doesn't mean we know. Even in the Rambam, he's not saying you know exactly which sin. Why this person, not that person, this sin. I have no idea why. But it's an assumption we make. It's theological ABCs. It's axiomatic that it's not coming for no reason. And if something bad is happening, there has to be a reason that we could, in theory, process religiously. Says the Rambam, on the other hand, if a person says, Lo yizaku, v'lo yariyu, I'm not going to daven. What's this got to do with anybody? Yomru dover zemi minaga olamiralanu. There are natural causes. Something happened in China. Something happened with a bat. And I'm not saying those didn't happen. And for the proper governmental sources, they should certainly the world needs to find out what happened. What did China know? What didn't it know? These things are all important on the level of minaga olam, for sure. But from a religious perspective, it's not relevant. It's a yetzer hara to be obsessed and reading countless articles about where it came from, what the Chinese did do and didn't do, what the President Trump did do and didn't do, what did Netanyahu know, what didn't he know, too fast, too slow, there should have been more extreme, less extreme. That's all important for other people. But for us ourselves, says Ram, if a person just thinks about those things and explains, oh, this is why it happened, because the governments, China hid the information and other governments were too slow to act and blah, 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 and the World Health Organization is corrupt, it's not corrupt. This is all background noise. None of it, says the Rambam, that have to do with the real cause. The ultimate cause has to be understood to be theological and spiritual. Says the Rambam, if a person only focuses on the natural causes and can explain it by minhag olam, a person like that, Harezu, says the Rambam very famously, achzorius. It's cruelty. That's cruel. It's not just wrong. It's much worse than wrong. It's cruel because by totally avoiding the ultimate spiritual cause, you're never going to fix it. Maybe at best you'll find a Band-Aid. The only cure, the only spiritual vaccine is trying to use this as an opportunity to get better and to use that not to look at peripheral explanations, but to look at the ultimate spiritual cause. Says the Rambam, a person who doesn't do that, it's cruel, v'go remes lehem lehida beik. And it's an incredible turn of phrase, since in modern Hebrew, that's the same shoresh of being contagious. It's the word that you see in every Hebrew news report about corona. Who's contagious, not contagious. Says the Rambam, the more you ignore the spiritual and just focus on the physical, the more you're going to spread the sin, the more you're going to spread the danger. So again, this is an incredibly subtle point, because I am not saying in any way, shape, or form that I know or that anybody knows why it happened at all, why it's affecting this country, not that country, why these people are more sick and less sick. I am the last person. I wouldn't begin to have any idea why. But it's clear that our Masorah is that each person has to think to him or herself, what if it happened? It has to be that there's a way that I can get better. None of us are kulo good. We all have chayavim tovos. We all have things that we're chayav for, that's for sure, certainly with me. And this has to be a wake-up call to search and to do a true cheshbon ha-nefesh. Where can we be better? What can we do to be better? That's the only way this will have been for meaningful. If it eventually just runs its course, minhag olam. If minhag olam eventually they just find a vaccine or a cure, but we don't do the cheshbon ha-nefesh, we don't figure out a way to improve from that, then on some level it will have been for naught. And Rahman al-Islam, with so much pain and suffering, the only thing that can make it worse is if it was also for nothing. At least we have to use this opportunity, says Rambam. Don't be achzorim. Don't be cruel. Don't just ignore the spiritual impetus. Seek deep in terms of our souls. And I'll just end with the following. We find this incredibly difficult for a lot of reasons. But one of the reasons is, and I think for understandable reasons, for understandably so, we say to ourselves something, again, if Rahman al-Islam, we're sick, so then it makes sense that we look into ourselves and say, what did I do wrong? But even then, and especially for those of us who are blessed not to be seriously sick, you say to yourself, in the most natural, intuitive way, whatever I'm doing wrong, could it be so bad? Could that be why this is happening? I mean, it sounds like absurd. For little old me, something like this is happening? But it's a mistake. Because it's true, if a human being had launched something like this deliberately, to say, yeah, the reason there's a worldwide pandemic is because you plony in Beit Shemesh, or you plony in Teaneck, or you plony in Ranana, or you plony in New York, that sounds ridiculous. I agree. But when you're talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's actually not ridiculous at all. What's completely impossible on a human level is completely possible for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is to say, he could have launched a global pandemic with a million different reasons. The reason is for me to teach me, hopefully to inspire me to grow one way. For you, it's to grow a different way. That's not a steer at all. And there's no question, there might be people who really need to learn a harsh lesson. And there's other people maybe who are already basically good people who could only learn more subtle lessons to get even better. I don't know. Each of us have to look onto our own neshama and do our best to try to figure out whatever the bigger reasons are, whatever the reasons are for a million other people. But what reason, what message might Hashem be sending me? And there's no question, the same HaKadosh Baruch Hu who could take the Jews out of Mitzrayim, who could split the Yam Suf, miracles that we're going to be celebrating the next week, that same HaKadosh Baruch Hu could just as easily do something, for whatever reason, which we don't understand. And of course, the pain and the suffering is heartbreaking, mamish heartbreaking. But that same HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for whatever the reason, could do it and send a million different messages. A message for you, a message for me, a message for all of us. And if we don't think about that, whatever our answer is, but if we don't even think about it, if we're not even asking the question, says the Rambam, that's minag achzorius. That's not sophisticated. That's not elevated. That's simplistic and it's cruel. And that is exactly the lesson of the Karban Todah, says Rav Zevin. Hagomel l'chayovim tovos, imirza Hashem. It should come soon that all the people who nebuch are sick recover, that they could all come to shul, we'll all be there with them, and they'll make in front of a minion, b'fnei am ve'eda b'rov amadras melech, they'll make the bracha hagomel l'chayovim tovos. Because all of us, each of us, whether we're sick or not, very sick or not sick at all of us are chayovim tovos. All of us are deserving of some level of Hashem's wrath, and hopefully when we get that Yeshua, none of us will be fully deserving. It'll be because of B'chazdei Hashem. May it come hopefully very, very quickly for all of us. Have a wonderful Shabbos, everyone, and look forward to seeing you on Sunday and Monday for some more Shurim before Pesach.